Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo, and when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth, and when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon, c'est bon. Special thanks to the Sofitel Los Angeles in Beverly Hills for their generous support of Andy's Girls. She. I can manage my mood, not your expectations.
I don't play games. I win them.
You know what I was just thinking? It's like, wait, I don't play games. I am the game. Would also.
That has some pretty strong I am the word on the street overtones.
Right? Maybe that's why I like it. Also, I think I ripped mine because I watched Potomac and Salt Lake City twice today. I watched Potomac once plus the after show in Salt Lake City twice. And I think I got mine because someone straight up literally said it, or it was a commercial. Like, I didn't come up with this. My next tagline for the next AG will have something to do with stealing content.
That is a professional danger, I'm sure, is every time you read like a fortune cookie, you know, you got to be like, don't put it in your tagline.
That's why so many Bravo podcasters, myself included, have taken like the vow of silence from our ear thingies to other Bravo, because there's no way to avoid stuff subconsciously seeping in. It's like, it's the professional sacrifice that we make. You know what isn't a sacrifice? Me recording with tonight's guest. You guys, it's Andy's Girls, episode 255, and I am so excited to be joined by one of my favorite people, senior gaming editor at inputmag.com, and someone I'm going to refer to as the podcast whisperer, because I find them very helpful when it comes to me. And we're going to drink. So can I just like shout out? I didn't even say this person's name yet, but can I please just shout out the fact that this person is, can I actually say this? Don't tell me to cut it because I absolutely won't because I'm too lazy. I've been through too much. Can I say that we're going to Soho House this week? Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah.
Can I say that?
Of course.
Okay. Because it's like, I don't want to veer into, you know, I just saw that like Christian cult thing, the weight loss for Jesus.
You don't want a Gwen Shamblin.
Right? I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about it. So
no,
it's
Soho
like...
House is unlike Fight Club. You can talk about it, but you can't take any pictures. Whereas that in Fight Club, I mean, the whole thing was videotaped. They made that documentary.
Also, the fact that they don't know, I will never recover from not being able. We're going to find
We're going to find some magic. Maybe
we'll take a photo. We'll get a photo. I know spots where you can get photos. And also, it also challenges you to find ways to backdoor brag in your Instagram story without being able to just show a picture.
Wait, but here's the problem. Are you allowed to at them? Or are you not allowed to do that? Like, can I geolocation?
You can geolocation. People do it. Especially non-members do it because you're not really going to get in any trouble.
Because they don't care about me.
Because you're not paying them. So they're just like, I might get an email.
That's definitely the truth.
It's mostly to avoid bothering celebrities or celebrities perceiving that they're going to be bothered. Like, I was sitting next to someone who, again, I probably shouldn't say, but a reality star was sitting next to me at drag brunch. And I could tell the room kind of palpably shifted when the drag queen was like, fuck those rules. Take pictures of me. I want to get on Drag Race or whatever.
Wait a second. Give me a hint about who the reality TV star is before I say your name. I'm holding your name.
He was a big loser.
I'm thinking.
A big gay loser on NBC.
I think that you're like something having to do with like the Biggest Loser.
It's Bob Harper.
The show. I'm so sorry.
You fished it out of me. He looked great. He's having a great time.
Love him. I had my eggs. Flirt with Andy.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Wait, what did you eat? They have like a whole egg bake thing that I had, which was delicious.
Well, guys, I mean, this episode's going to be sunny side up. How many things can I say to pivot to this guest name? You guys, so excited. Back on the People's People Zoom, Patreon, Kiki, except it's not Patreon, it's AG Classic Couch. Welcome back, Ryan Houlihan. Ryan, how are you?
Oh, I'm good now. I'm so happy to be back. I'm talking to my favorite lady.
I mean, listen, we haven't spoken in a minute. Just kidding. I've called you literally 30 times today. And I am just so excited to talk to you because there's so much happening. And I feel like I was thinking about us before we recorded because that's really what I do in my free time. And, you know, there's something to be said for our relationship and our friendship. I feel like we balance each other out well. Like if I am spiraling, you're a really good counter. My hope is that, not to say that you've ever spiraled, but like if you're having a moment, which we all do, we're all human people, then I hopefully add a little bit of a zhuzh. Like
you're very good at me being like, I'm so excited about this. It's amazing. I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to drink nuclear waste. And you're like, hey, bud, you want to Google nuclear waste?
100%. And I, you know, call you when Rome is burning and you're like, it's okay. What about Paris? I'm like, you know what? That's a really valid point. That's a really valid point.
Have you considered fiddling?
So listen, how are you? How has your October journey been so far?
Good. As a spooky gay, I'm living out loud. I don't want to waste your listeners' time because we're on FaceTime right now, but I could give you a tour. My husband turned our apartment into like Halloween Fantasia. I'm surrounded by like a spirit Halloween store right now.
Are you?
Yeah.
Do you guys
yeah.
go all out?
All out. I mean, we took our chandelier and we turned it into a spider.
So are you gonna, yeah, tell me.
Well, we're living out loud. Halloween has always been my, like, Christmas, and I'm shameless about it, just like I am with Disney World. I don't care if it's cheesy or choogy or chintzy or whatever to people. I like Halloween. I think it's a lot of fun, and I don't really care if you think I'm a child. I enjoy it. So my whole apartment is currently Halloween decked out. I have 4 costumes ready to go.
What are your costumes? Can we know?
I can tell you 2 of them. And you're going to be excited about one. One of which is I'm going to go as 1966 Batman, and I'm going to make my husband go as Robin.
Love that. I'm guessing that's not the one that I'm supposed to be.
No. Okay, I just, I'm finally thin enough to dress as a superhero, so I'm like really excited about it.
Ryan.
And on the other side of things, I'm going to a Real Housewives of Beverly Hills Halloween party, and I'm going as Kathy Hilton in full drag.
Wait a second. Where is this party and why wasn't I invited? How am I not the guest of honor?
It's a very small housewarming party of like 6 people at my friend Chelsea's. And we're all dressing as Beverly Hills characters. And I'm dressing my husband as Kim Richards, his favorite housewife. And I'm going as Kathy Hilton. And I got scary baby doll heads to make into a wreath.
Are you going to cover your husband in turtles or something? Like, can you get a little heart made out of turtle pictures?
He's going to, his hands are going to, he'll be wearing gloves made of chicken salad.
Oh, if you got him to bring just like one of those glass bowls and just had him knead whatever and say it's chicken salad. If he really wanted to be method, he should be preparing chicken salad with his hand, and you can just, you know, have him, you know, drink water with a straw or something, because he should be in the process of kneading the entire night.
The whole night.
The entire night.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to get him a Target shopping bag and like a Disney horse or whatever, like one of those Disney horses.
Oh,
did you ever hear her story about the Disney horse?
That she couldn't ride it?
No, she couldn't ride regular horses because she'd only ever ridden horses at Disney. And the Disney horses are trained that you don't need to know how to ride them. They're just so good. And she got, after she was with Disney, she got on a regular horse and she realized she had no idea how to ride a horse. And that was like, to me, the ultimate Kim Richards anecdote of just like, what has this world done to this poor girl?
Speaking of wild fucking anecdotes, I think you should get a Barbie doll and like strap it to your head or something because of this new revelation that Kathy Hilton got hit in the head by with a ball or something at a Barbie commercial. I mean, how do we not know that? How do we not know great American history? Like, what happened to us? Public school education. Like,
who's recording? It's your job, the scribes of history, to get this down. The Library of Alexandria is burned, apparently.
Who is the Beverly Hills dramaturg who fucked up this poorly
Brian Moylan.
I had to learn? Brian, if you're listening, which you maybe are and maybe aren't, I don't really know. Ryan, there's so much for us to discuss. We did start off we had like six pre-shows for this, and our pre-recording was to say that we weren't going to talk about Beverly Hills.
I know.
Because there's so much going on in Potomac and Salt Lake City.
I will say Potomac and Salt Lake City are, they're in their golden hours. Like, this is like Housewives at its most delicious and perfectly casted, and it's just it hit. It just, they're not missing. It is a wild Sunday night, and I'm having a lot of fun at the movies. Beverly Hills, on the other hand, is now a sideshow act that I can't stop talking and thinking about, but I know it's not golden age Beverly Hills.
What the fuck? Are you kidding? It's one of the best seasons. It's not golden age, but it was one of the best seasons of all time. It's not golden age. I get it.
Golden age
totally
is the first two seasons. We're never going to recapture the magic that was.
We'll never. Yeah. And shouldn't be.
No, it shouldn't be legal.
It shouldn't be legal. Oh my God. That's totally true. It's a phenomenal season. Historic in so many ways, the wildest, the craziest ways, but it's not golden age.
It's not golden age.
What makes a franchise season a golden age Housewives?
I think the
season?
First time that it finds its identity and rhythm, and then we know from then on that's what this city is, and it can reinvent itself and stuff, but it's like Scary Island was like its like a virgin moment where you were like, oh, that's who Madonna is. I get her. I like her. You know what I mean? It was like, you know, hi. I was like, oh my God, Jill Zarin coming in and crashing this vacation is what New York is. You know what I mean? Beverly Hills, Kim and Kyle fighting in a limo is what Beverly Hills is at its essence. And when they stumble upon that, like Vicky screaming about a little family van, or like, did you go up to Bass Lake to Gretchen? Like, that was like, oh, OC is suburban hatred. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, this is just suburban hell and heaven, and they're just squished into like an hour, and I get to just enjoy it and like slurp it down.
What do you think is the vibe or the style that Salt Lake City can now be identified by?
It is the gossipy people that you know from church, that you feel like they're like part of your family. But they're not really. They could leave you at any moment. But you spend a lot of time together, and there's a lot of gossip happening. And that they're all of different religions just adds to the variety for the viewer at home. But they very much have the vibe of like, well, did you hear? Like, or so-and-so is my cousin, we just found out.
I also love that. I totally agree. And I love that they're building upon the idea that many of us cannot tell some of them apart. Like Lisa Barlow and Meredith, I do believe that we can all tell apart. Now there are two blondes and then two husbands, one of whom has $1 million to spare, as one does. I mean, honestly, same. And the other one is the husband of one of the blondes. And I was like, I cannot tell both husbands apart. And I truly didn't even realize that there were two separate blondes until the second time I watched. And then I was like, wait, one of these is a Sarah something. One of these is, I want to call her Paige, but I know that's wrong. She looks like a Paige.
I identified her as Sarah Paulson in the Lana Del Rey biopic.
Okay. Coming soon. I mean, and yet it does feel like there is some sort of beautiful Mormon magic happening where the editors are just, they're like mid-coast. They're not even riding the wave. They're like on top of the wave, and the wave, God forbid, hopefully, fingers crossed, is never, two thumbs up, maybe 10, never ending. This is never cresting.
No.
Never cresting.
This is a wave that keeps getting higher and there's nothing in its way. And I'm thrilled. I'm like, let's go. I think the moment that I like that this most recent episode that I was like, oh, this franchise is not just perfect. It's like, I am tuning in every week for must-see television. I will miss moments. I have to pay attention. I can't like play a video game while I watch. I need to like sit and like focus. Was when Heather said, oh, I'm not going to the thin part of the ice because I lied about my weight.
The way I felt during that moment, like when I had to get my fucking driver's permit or driver's license at whatever, I guess 16. And I thought they weighed you at the DMV. And I was like, I don't know how I should negotiate this, but I guess it needs to be realistic, but also not yet or maybe ever attainable. And when she said that, I was like, Heather Gay, regardless of what you're doing in press about Jen Shah, you are my sister.
Well, that's,
you are my sister.
That's the thing. The best housewives is, I know you're not a good person consciously, but God, do I like watching you. Like, you're doing something bad. I get it. We're all acting out. That's part of the job here. But you're so good at being on television. Just stay on it forever.
But also, isn't she a good person? I mean, this is so shitty of me, but like, it's because I identify as her that I'm like, wait, might need to protect her, aka myself. Don't we think she's like, I think she's a good person.
At her core, I think she has good intentions and stuff. But I think I gave up on any housewife ever considering them a good person around Stephanie's fall from grace with a lot of the like MAGA stuff. I was like, okay, if Stephanie is like I an just, angel, I'm not signing on for anybody to just be like, oh, wow, I blindly support them. I can't do that with anybody on Bravo. And I think that that's fair. I think everyone would understand. Like, I don't think there's a single Eileen. Maybe Eileen is the only housewife who's never been like problematic in some way.
I mean, I would say until this season, Heather Thompson, too.
Yeah.
But may her memory be a blessing. And maybe we'll see her back. I mean, I don't know. Wait, I want to get back to Salt Lake City. But before we do, I have two quick questions for you, because I don't know that I actually know this answer, even though I'm sure I've asked you on the previous 10 episodes, of which you've guessed it so beautifully. Which housewife would you call your spiritual housewife? Not your favorite housewife, but the housewife who you could identify with spiritually, and that can be in a problematic way. As you know, even though at one point she was my favorite, but like, again, may her memory rest in peace, Shannon Bador for a long time had been my spiritual housewife for reasons that are both optimistic and challenging, but honest. Who is your spiritual housewife? And it can be anyone, obviously, present, past, whatever.
This is, I know what it sounds like, but I have to be honest. I have always felt very represented.
Danielle, I'm going to fucking
God.
I knew the way that you know, let's just say the listeners would get me right now.
Me, I'm
I know
like,
you're
I'm like
building
Kelly
to
Dodd.
Something terrible. I know you're building to something terrible.
I was going
to
say.
Just tell me the franchise. Don't tell me. Tell me the franchise first.
New York.
Okay, then I think you were about to say it, so I know.
Yeah, Bethany has forever long been the person who I felt is my audience insert in the world of Bravo. Recently, a lot of the stuff that's like from the past week, not loving, I love her charity work. I didn't love what she had to say about trans people. I wasn't like vibing with that for her.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yes. I didn't know what you were talking about for a second, and I haven't listened to the clip because I don't know.
But it's not the first problematic thing she's done. And certainly her viewpoint and her tone and the way she approaches issues, I see a lot of positive and negative about myself in. Mm-hmm. I similarly like a lot of I see a lot of things that are positive about Heather Dubrow, I think, are also positives about me. But we have very different negatives. But I think my favorite housewife, this isn't, I know this isn't what you asked, but I think this week I realized that my current favorite housewife, Candy Burris, you'll always have a place in my heart, but I think it's Meredith Marks. I think Meredith is my favorite housewife.
I knew that you were going to say Meredith Marks. I knew that you were going to say that.
I think it just clicked for me. I was like, I like Meredith a lot. I want to spend a lot of time with her.
How did the puzzle pieces fit into a Brooks Marks tracksuit? Not
how
to say that you
said
Brooks.
She defended her son and how she wasn't going to turn this into a, like, as much as she is recording it, and certainly she showed up to filming, she wasn't trying to make this like a housewives moment where like someone throws wine. She was like, just apologize. And then we can move on. And obviously Jen's like pathologically unable to do that and pulls all these stunts where she's throwing her tennis bracelet. But I saw her just be like walking away and being surrounded by people who were encouraging her to either betray her son or to make a moment out of it, which I think Whitney and Heather were to the side because they were like, let them battle this one out. Jenny's hyping them all up, like being like yelling at them. Like, you barely know these people. Lisa's out there like, why don't you just apologize to her or whatever? And it's like, I don't think anyone here has good intentions for Brooks, who this is about, other than Meredith. And that combined with a lot of the supercut of her being like, who's calling who a fraud? Or like when she was like, I told Jen not to go after my family on Watch What Happens Live. The playfulness with which she is sticking to her guns and the excitement that she has for what is going on the show, even when it's like, I want to say like, even when it's like negative or it doesn't involve her, she listens to what's going on. I don't get the vibe that Lisa Barlow knows a lot about what's happening in the other women's lives or that Mary's like keeping up with them. Meredith, I believe, is listening when people talk. And I think that she clearly doesn't have to, you know, like she'd still be on the show if she just disregarded everyone's feelings in current situations. And she doesn't. And I like that about her. I think I like a housewife who has a level of normalcy and a level of surreality to them. I want someone who I'm like, you're grounded, but you live in cuckoo banana land. Like, I like Heather Dubrow. Heather Dubrow will tell you when your behavior is outrageous, but also her house is way more outrageous than anything you'll ever do with your life.
That's such a good point.
So I like Meredith, and I like her husband most of the time as well. And I like that they've been very transparent about what's going on in their marriage that we know of so far. But they've shown stuff that they didn't necessarily need to. And they did it in a pretty realistic way where they were like, this is what's happening or whatever. And they didn't, I don't know, it didn't feel like they were doing it to play out a storyline. And so whether or not they actually were playing out a storyline doesn't matter to me because functionally I bought it. And so I like that.
I love hearing this from you. I really do. Can I ask what your reaction is to the overall Brooks dynamic? He's gotten a lot of pushback previously on social, and I want to get your thoughts on Jen's argument that he came for her and somehow Meredith came for her kids. I want to get your thoughts, especially because of your connection to Meredith and to Brooks.
Anyone under the age of 25 is unpleasant to be around, and I don't blame Brooks for being unpleasant, I'll say. He's very affected, obviously. I think that's a total defense mechanism. I totally understand it. He clearly has some thirst for what the show could provide him. Also understand that. Anyone judging him for wanting camera time, you watch Bravo. You clearly understand. You clearly understand the benefit of the camera time to these people, especially to a young person who wants to get into a field that will be directly benefited from TV time. I try not to judge him so much as I try to like enjoy his affectations and like what he brings out in his mom and leave the rest. You know, I don't need to buy a tracksuit. But I do think, if he hasn't come out, whether or not you thought that he did or that he was going to or that he will, is none of your fucking business. Like, it's not any of your business. And yelling grinder and flashing your vag, like, as much as if that were me at 20 years old, I probably would have laughed along and high-fived you and walked out and been like, my mom's friend is a mess. But that, any reaction to that is totally valid, and you should have apologized then. And when you didn't, and he went around and talked about the thing that bothered him, you shouldn't have been shocked, because if you do something that's going to bother somebody, they're going to talk about it, especially if they're like a child. And I think anybody under 25, in general for me, housewives-wise, is... it's not that they're off limits. It's just like, where is this going? You're not going to change them. Their actions are not the responsibility of their parents, because they're legal adults making their own choices. And you're not going to change. They're 20. He's 21 or 22 or whatever. You're not going to fix him and make him like the person you want him to be who talks through his conflicts. He's a child. But I also think like it's just so truly none of Jen's business. And for her to not understand the perspective of like, I'm telling you exactly the reason that he's hurt, whether or not it's intentional. I'm telling you, you now understand what you did. You are not only denying that you did it, you're denying like the validity of me and my son being upset. And again, if it was just Meredith, totally fine. Deny her validity. We're on Housewives. We're here to have fun. But Brooks is like, that's real life stuff, right? Like, even the marriages are two adults who have chosen to be on television, and they've both agreed to film. And even if Brooks is jumping to be on screen, I just don't think that a 21-year-old really knows what he's getting himself into in that regard. And to go so hard at him over so early over something so personal to me is deranged. And so my entire sympathy is with Brooks and his mom. I think that this is probably genuinely incredibly painful. If this was me before I had come out, or if this was even me when I had come out and my parents were uncomfortable with it or felt any sort of insecurity or any sort of shame, or we were working through any of this, it probably would have destroyed our relationships and my self-image for a very long time. And my parents and I have not always been on great terms, and I'm really glad we had the time and space to work it out alone without anybody's input. And pun intended, go to inputmag.com. See how I just get ads in for free?
I love it. I'm so into it.
I think like this whole thing is just too real for me. Like it's dark. It's not like you broke etiquette or you said something about my friend or you stole a caterer. This is like, Jen, I need you to just actually realize what's happening. And like, obviously this is going to be played out over the course of a while and it will impact lots of different storylines, but I need you to wrap up right here admitting that you did something wrong so me and my son can move on. And that she isn't doing that, none of the rest of it matters. I don't have to like Brooks. I don't have to like want to hang out with him. I don't have to want to buy his tracksuit. I don't have to think he's cool, even though I might think all of those things, and I'm not saying I don't. None of that, it's completely immaterial, because what Jen is doing and did is so directly harmful to someone who is not in her line of fire, really, that I think it speaks really heavily to her character, but it also speaks to the character of the people around her. That as much as Heather and Whitney have been saying, like, you know, you're wrong, you should just go apologize, like, they've been telling her straight up to her face. Hanging out with someone and having fun with them when you know that there's this giant thing that they're doing and that's completely unresolved is wildly uncomfortable for me. And I can't just like blindly be like, well, we're friends, so I'm not thinking about it. That's like uncomfortable for me too. So if I were them, I'd be a little bit more, I mean, if I was Heather in general, I'd be a little bit lighter in the loafers about, you know, dancing around the Jen of it all, because I think she's making some bad calls on that front. But again, that's between the two of them, and they're adults and they're both stars of the show.
I mean, at least Heather and Whitney are recognizing and talking about what Meredith is doing. Lisa isn't even doing that. She's like gaslighting her friend by refusing to acknowledge the reality so that she doesn't have to participate in the exploration of said reality. And the whole thing with Jen saying, she said a couple times, which may have been difficult to understand because she was screaming so much, but which I can appreciate. She said a couple times that, like, but he harmed me. And putting aside how he harmed her kids, which who could have harmed her kids more when it comes to her reputation on camera than Jen herself? The him harming her by talking about it being uncomfortable, seeing her, I'm going to take him literally, seeing her vagina as someone with a vagina. Swipe right if you're interested. don't ever want to see my parents' friends or anybody's
if anyone shows
sexual
me
organs
their
without,
genitals, I'm going to talk
shit. Without their consent. And how would that have worked if Jen didn't have a vagina but had a different sexual organ? You know, like, it doesn't cross over to me. So the fact that she is female is not an exception to the idea that you should not behave in that way. And the way that Meredith has characterized it, she has said that, like, she asked her not to do this and she kept flailing her legs. And if he literally saw her in the context of being with his mother and his mother's friend being filmed for a reality show where they're obviously getting his reactions to these very uncomfortable sexualized situations, I would have said much worse
in
than what he said.
In front of his parents,
in
his
front
childhood,
of his mother, in his, well, not childhood, but in front of his house, in his house,
in which he is still not a complete adult who is independent and completely self-sufficient. He's in a home with his parents. He's functionally a child in the relationship. And someone's flashing their genitals to him in front of his parents on national television.
I'm so uncomfortable with it.
Of course he's going to talk shit. I can't imagine. The people at home are not realizing, like, I don't think the people at home 100% of the time realize that the people on screen are real people and that's, like, their real mm-hmm. life. That even yeah. if it's a fantastic situation they've chosen to be in, the fallout of it is in real time for them with their real friends on their real social media, blowing up their real phones at their real holiday parties. They have to be like, I'm embarrassed for the next whatever. And also that it's going to be the first thing that comes up when you Google him. And he has some pretty stated intentions of having a public life at doing fashion. So mm-hmm. to kick it off on this foot for him is really unfair. When you go on TV, you roll the dice, but to hijack someone's first, like, public outing as a professional who is, like, you know, it's like, my mom's going to be on the show. Maybe I can get 5 or 10 minutes to plug my product that we're going to do this business together, whatever. Don't shit on it. Like, shit on the product if he continues to plug it and you don't like the product. But don't shit on him on his first appearance on camera. It all feels so wrong in so many ways that it's really hard to find an out. I really, every time I've seen people defend her, it's like, well, you know, if you're ready to talk spicy, you got to expect spicy talk back. It's like, I don't think saying someone showed me their genitals without my consent or without my consent is spicy talk. I think that's.
I hear you. My pushback to that is there is an argument that he is appearing way too much on camera and is a character in a way that he's a character. So it's like when you sign up for this, there's going to be valid critique. And I totally get that. I also think Seth was not here for a lot of filming, and obviously at some point there was a decision that someone needed to step in like the surrogate family role to support Meredith as a housewife. That she has another son who
plot
we don't
exposition.
See on camera. Chloe is in New York going to school, and Brooks was able to be there. So it's like we're punishing him for filling that role on camera that obviously he agreed to do, but may have served a strategic purpose truly in supporting his mom. And I think people think, well, he's doing it. And of course, as you said, why wouldn't he? But I do also think there is another reason for this, that he's actually also helping his dad, which is something that isn't really discussed. I do want to shift gears from this a little bit because there are other things I want to get your thoughts on, but I do have two just remaining questions before we close the door on this aspect of SLC, which is, in the moment, do you think that Jen believed in her own apology when she apologized to Meredith? And do you think, regardless of whether or not Meredith felt it was honest and real, did that matter to her as much as actually hearing it on camera?
I think
what was the value of it?
It mattered to Meredith to hear an apology and some mm-hmm. kind of contrition, just to say that she did this for her son. I think that's an mm-hmm. important thing. She didn't let up until she got something for him. That's really important to them. Mm-hmm. But I think Jen genuinely wants this to be over, but I don't mm-hmm. believe she believes she did anything wrong or that she has anything to atone for, or she believes that she was just doing reality TV fun personality stuff and he's being really dramatic and she's stirring the pot, and but she's not realizing that, like, you're not dealing with Lisa Rinna. You're dealing with, like, a child about the most destructive, hard, painful thing that he's ever dealt with, besides maybe his parents' possible divorce. And you're, like, stirring at it. And it's like, I don't know. I think the value of it was real to Meredith, but not real to Jen.
Jen said that there's a double standard when it comes to criticisms sort of lobbed her way. Would you agree with her that there is some sort of double standard?
I think she has set up a double standard for herself because she has created a situation where she apologizes one day, she's still mad the next, or she's still believes she did nothing wrong the next day. Mm-hmm. She gets an apology, but then she stays mad at people. She's on Twitter making problems in between seasons that are just completely over or immaterial that you don't need to do for attention or relevancy. I think you create a double standard when you set up a pattern of behavior that people can't expect you to keep your word. If I don't expect someone to keep their word, I'm going to have to keep tabs on them if I have to be around them. And I don't get there. I give you the benefit of the doubt when I first meet you. It's if you repeatedly screw up, which she has, you've created the double standard. So whether or not she's right that it exists, it's immaterial. There should be a double standard for Jen Shah. And of the things we know now, of course there should be a separate standard for someone who has verifiably got no conscience.
Yeah, and she does seem to be rather focused on the fact that she didn't do things intentionally, which really has nothing to do. It is something, but it's not everything when Meredith is explicitly telling her that, like, regardless of her intent, the impact was enormous.
Intent is one of the pieces of the puzzle that you have to put together in situations that are really unpleasant or where someone's done something really egregiously wrong. Intent is a piece of it, but it's not by any means the largest piece. It's nice to know, but it's not like, it's like a flag on the top of a boat. It's good you didn't stick a flag on your giant evil boat, but it's still a giant evil boat. You know what I mean? Or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like you to draw attention to it and to, like, to purposefully do things are difficult and awful. But if you say to someone, like, I didn't mean to do this and I didn't bring it up after that and I tried to just move on, it's still like you still did the harm. It's not like it's just gone. And I think intentionality is also like a coward's defense. If you don't have anything to say, like, about how if you don't have no ability to own up and face the music, you can hide behind the fact of, but I didn't mean it, this isn't fair. And it's, you know, ignorance of the law or ignorance of your actions doesn't mean that they don't have material consequences. If I hit someone with my car and I, you know, accidentally did it, I still hit someone with my car. You know, like, it doesn't go away. It's not gone. It's part of the discussion when we talk about what I need to rehabilitate. But it certainly doesn't mean that it's like a mulligan.
100%. And for Jen, who's also now accused in federal court of, like, intending to defraud bajillions of people and as the co-conspirator mastermind of this enormous fraud-based empire, her talking about her intent is like, sweetie, you might as well practice and talk about the fact that even if you intended to do a certain thing, it landed in a way that was different, or there's, this is practice for you. Either way, it's fascinating timing for us.
There's something to be said about the fact that we know what most of her intentions are. We know what drives her. We know what gets her up in the morning. Meredith, part of why I like her, to bring it back around, I just realized this while talking it out, is there is an air of mystery to what's going
on.
I want to know what Meredith thinks and why she does things and what her opinions are. I genuinely want to spend time with this woman. With Jen, I'm like, you want attention and money and, like, sexual power. That's all that Jen seems to have pursued in our time with her. And attention and money and sexual power, like, they're not noble goals that I can be like, well, she was just trying to get a business off the ground. Like, she was just trying to steal and defraud and capture people's attention through positive or negative behavior. I don't know. I find Jen to be a very worrying character. Like, that we need to, as a community, we need to We need to request that Bravo only invite someone like that on sparingly. You know, like a little Danielle Staub here, a little Jen Shah there. I get it. We're going to throw a little, like, we want to throw a bomb over the fence. But Housewives tends to attract a certain kind of personality. And I think we're getting an increasing frequency of these people that I don't think are in service of what most people like about the show.
Conversely, you know, a little bit goes a long way. It really kind of shows you the power of a strong beta, which I have argued for years through Kyle Richards, which a lot of people don't like. But Meredith Marks, and they have every right to, Meredith Marks to me is the epitome of a strong beta with flashes of something, which I wouldn't necessarily consider alpha energy. She just sort of has that spark, which is
she's
so
a star.
Interesting.
I mean, she's
a,
like
she's
Sonya.
A disengaging star. Yeah. What?
Well,
not
she's like Sonya.
Little.
She's like Sonya in the fact that I truly believe that I would watch either of them do almost anything.
Oh, and forever.
And just anything. And so if combined them being so interestingly affected and so mysterious in their motives and their drives and their opinions, combine that with a little star power and boom, boom, shebang, baby. You've got a franchise.
Listen, I want to get your thoughts on the Lisa of it all, because I thought that final scene was so I was charmed by it, which I know wasn't necessarily the purpose of it, but it was certainly the result. Before I do that, though, I do need to give a shout out to one of my favorite charming hotels. This past week, I had the joy, the pleasure of staying at the Sofitel Los Angeles at Beverly Hills. One of my favorite stays. I have stayed there before. We're both doing the chef's kiss, which you can't see because it's an audio podcast, but we're telling you about it, and that matters. The location is perfect for LA, right at the center of Los Angeles, at the crossroads of Beverly Hills and West Hollywood. It is the iconic location of Pantygate. Did I wear my undergarments in honor of Erica Jane? Yes, I did. But was I thinking about that moment, that scene? Did I watch a little bit of it during the trip and literally yesterday and today trying to pull back my stay back into the memory of my body? 1,000% I did. It's a bajillion star hotel with luxury amenities you dream of. I had a crazy stunning view of the Hollywood Hills, the Hollywood sign, and more. They have a celebrity hotspot bar and hair salon and so much more. And I just want to give a shout out to the Sofitel Los Angeles at Beverly Hills for being so kind and generous. It was my second time staying there. I hope to come back soon and stay there again. It was absolutely incredible. And I have to tell you, I've stayed at some like fancy pants hotels, including in Beverly Hills, and the care that they brought into everyone helping, the COVID safety, it was absolutely 5-star. If you're interested in following them on social, you absolutely do and should at Sofitel Los Angeles. Website to book www.sofitel-los-angeles.com. Thank you so much, Sofitel Los Angeles at Beverly Hills, for such a wonderful stay.
Invite me. No, I love
Ryan
Sofitel.
I
would love to go.
Oh my God, they're incredible. And you know I love the French. You know I do want to be bicontinental. Wait, where's France? I don't know. It's somewhere in the world and I want to be there in
it's
New York
in
and also
Orlando,
LA.
Right? It's in Orlando by the Ratatouille ride.
Yes, that's 1,000% it. Okay, listen, pivoting back to that last moment with Lisa. Who is this woman, non-Paige? What the fuck? Angie? Did I make that up? Rachel? What is her name?
I knew it before we started talking, and now I've lost it.
I swear to God, we're calling her Angelica Rachel. Her name is Angie R., the blonde. Not Sarah whatever, but Angie R. I truly have absolutely no idea about her name, but it is her name now. It is her name now.
Yeah.
That moment, her entry as a friend of, her dipping into so many different little pools of fucking drama and giving us this gift. What's your reaction?
She came to make a splash and enemies out of lifelong friends. And frankly, I really respect that. I really think that yes. You know what? Like, if this is Lisa's job now, Lisa, buckle up because I'm going to help you perform your duties. I thought it was, what an episode to make as your entrance. Trans rights.
Yes. $1 million donations.
Fights. Beautiful casino night, by the way. Very nicely pulled off.
Gorgeous. Not since literally any casino night. Apologies to Katie Ross, but this is how it gets done. Also, Angie R's pink feather outfit, her $1 million dress. One of my favorite outfits anyone has worn on any. I can't stop watching that moment because I am like a god. I have a pair of Manolos that are very similar that maybe I'll break out for the next time we record. AKA, I'll point to them while wearing literally nothing on my feet. I thought she looked stunning.
The dress itself was an
ally. I want to know her dress. Her dress was an ally to LGBTQ plus IA plus community. It was absolutely fabulous, and I can't get enough. Do you think that she believes that Lisa – do you think that Lisa was involved in this revoking the booking of catering for this event through her assistant?
Well, let's just start with Lisa is very powerful in that area, especially yes. in the catering and quarters.
She has a huge career in PR events, Sundance. Yeah.
She's been on Housewives.
A lot of people, a lot of work.
Just for that. She's appeared on Housewives before this show started, mm-hmm. this franchise. She appeared on Housewives just because of that power. So like, yeah, I do believe that if she did a phone call and said, wow, I didn't know you were doing that. Well, very interesting. And then she hung up. That person would take it as a threat. She doesn't need to make an explicit, like, if you do her event, you're not doing my event. I thought that we had a special relationship. She doesn't have to say that. She can just say, wow, well, okay. And someone's going to say, well, I think Lisa's uncomfortable, so we should probably drop out because she does a lot of business with us. And then it makes it back through the grapevine. The reality of what happened makes it back rather than the like point for point. This is what was explicitly said. But I do know that like the caterers did come up with a solution. Like the brother or somebody did the event instead. That the event clearly went off without a hitch and was good. So I think it was kicked up as a little extra drama and something to bring to her? Yes. And I think her reaction was mostly out of being blindsided and not really knowing how to prove like, that she like how in the moment do you prove that you didn't intimidate someone by mentioning something? Like, it's impossible. But I think I do think that reaction was because she didn't know it was coming. And it does. I do think that they puffed up the drama a little bit. Like, I don't think it was that dire of a circumstance.
Also, 100% she introduced her friend to this show. And then her friend was like, cool. I really want to do it. So what I'm going to do is 1000% fuck with you and loop in your primary foe who I'm now going to care. I share some sort of like very long, early in the line bloodline. And now I'm going to say when you're here, your family. Like, it's like absolutely insane.
I love too that Mormons just say cousin as if like, I mean, yeah, conceivably there's an O'Houlihan running around Ireland that I'm related to, but I don't think I would call them my cousin. It really gave Meghan King Edmonds in Dublin just talking
Not
to random people on the street.
Meghan King Edmonds stood on a streetcar in fucking Dublin and said, are you my family? Have we witnessed the bringing together of cousins as a way to form an alliance? And honestly, I'm here for it. I'm pretty sure that there is some way that Whitney and I are related at this point.
Characters on Game
over
of
Utah, like it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Characters on Game of Thrones had less tenuous relationships than these two, and they literally ruled by like blood family lines. It was really tenuous. I will say that, but I also think like, if you know that your friend signed up for a friend of, you gotta know you're probably gonna lose that friend. Never sign up for a reality show with someone you're friends with. It's just where it goes. That's just reality.
Or you might get like a nice little ride. It will eventually crumble. My guess is that Lisa thought she would get more than an hour of Angie, Rachel, before this fucking hit the fan. But I mean, and the fact that Whitney was a part of it and the fact that Whitney doesn't understand, which I love about her. There's like no breaking the fourth wall on Salt Lake City. There just is the fourth wall and they tap dance all over it. The fact that Whitney walks into that party and when she is ignored, pivots out to the camera. She does this like whatever plie ballet fifth position move and does it again when she's told to leave the space. Like she is looking at the producers as a way of being like, can you believe this is happening? Because I think to her, they are an active participant. Surely in her life, they are. But it's just, it is bliss to me. It is bliss. It is bliss.
For two things. One, I need Whitney to speak to us and not the people in the room for the rest of the show. I want her to just, I just want her to be like, can you believe this? Around the corner of, or while people are fighting or whatever. I want that. But also, I have to say, if I was Lisa Barlow, who I don't particularly care for,
I love her so much. I'm sorry.
Oh, I love watching her. But
she's great. I almost kind of am into her as a result. I don't know why. You can't explain the people you love. I can't say sorry for it.
I completely get it that Lisa hates Whitney, because this is the second time that an event-centric accusation that probably was mostly misinterpreted came to her doorstep. And she's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, those bartenders that didn't work for her that Whitney was mad at. Like, it's, you know, I think we've established something of a pattern on Whitney's end. However.
Which Angie R. knows.
Yeah, she's seen the show. Angie R. has seen the show.
I mean, she's now inside of it.
You know, Whitney watched like every Housewives before she got on, right?
Well, here's my question. A lot of people are like, the Whitney performance, it is obviously performative this season.
Yeah.
But because she is also, she does give me big Barbie energy, where some of us think we're Barbie, but like maybe we're a little bit Skipper. Like she is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously a juicier, pumped up version.
Sure. But who doesn't give
it's
us that?
It's still fun.
That was the Vicky Gunvalson. That's Vicky Gunvalson.
Wow, these comparisons you're making are very...
No, because Vicky Gunvalson, no matter what scene she was in, she was identifiably could not keep herself from being Vicky Gunvalson. However, when she pumped herself up to go to Mexico and Andalays and whatever else, I was like, you know what? Pump yourself up. Have a fun rip-roaring time. Play out your little, like, fucking fantasy of your Mexican sexual conquest with your man or whatever. Like, do whatever you got to do. But she can't help but be Vicky. And I do believe that Whitney at her heart of hearts cannot help but be Whitney. She's going to get on the pole. She's going to spin around. She's going to say things that I don't think she understands aren't very sexy.
I mean, it's true.
When her husband slapped her on that ass with the cake or the food or whatever, you know, that upcoming on the season scene where he's slapping her ass. They're like clearly in a very sexual situation.
Ooh, I'm excited for that.
They're in their underwear covered in cake or food or something. And he slaps her on the ass and she goes, oh, yeah. And I was like, there is something so Whitney about this moment.
Okay, you know what? Honestly, I'm just going to say it. We deserve it. After Ashley and Michael and Ramona and Mario, and I would say Tamara and Eddie, which made me so viscerally uncomfortable, I am a little bit into that. Like, that gets me a little. I'm into it. Like, they are fucking sexy, and they are enjoying each other, and I love to see it.
What's interesting with Whitney as opposed to many other housewives is that I do believe there's two. No, there isn't two. I don't want to say that there's two, but there's two overarching themes with housewives sexuality, where they either ooze it because they're naturally very sexual people, or there's a performative level of like, I'm doing the check boxes of sexuality, but it's only because I know I get X, Y, and Z, like people treat me a certain way and it's a level of respect. But like Erica Jane has never put out a vibe of real sexuality, but she does all the stuff she's supposed to.
It's all performative.
But it's all performative. It ends right where the makeup ends. Whereas Whitney, I believe, is just like doing her voiceover or like shooting a confessional and she's like, I'm going to fuck that man later. Like, I do believe she in her mind is a sexual being living a sexually free, adventurous lifestyle. And I love that. I love to watch it.
I also would say that when she says we're only having sex 3 to 4 days a week, whatever the number is, she knows that that is still a very high.
Yes.
Whitney is smarter than anyone maybe before has given her credit for.
Yeah.
And yet she also is Whitney with a little bit of a
She's also
zhuzh.
A little dumber than anyone gives her credit for. But right. in a fun way. In a
I
good
love
way.
It.
Yes.
I love it. And also
May
she,
we all.
And she gets away with stuff. And I'm like, you know what? I'm here for it. The way, like, Lisa can never really be able to rip her apart. And she knows that. And that probably annoys the fuck out of her because you can't. Whitney is a little bit of a Bambi. She's a little Bambi. She doesn't have big Bambi energy, but there's a little bit where it might be too easy to like really take her apart. And it might also be more difficult. And that's because there would be, I think, an audience response. It's just a different, it's not alpha or beta. It's just, I don't know what it is. It's the complicated simplicity of it all. It's very difficult to grasp with. And I also think she gets a lot of extra graces as a result. I think the major criticism her way this season is the fact that it does feel performative, that she's doing, there's too much extra there. But I do also agree with the fact that at the root, unlike with other people, including some, well, unlike with other people in the housewives realm, there is still some truth.
Yeah. And it's a very needed element on this particular franchise. The like kind of unpredictable, fun ball of energy stuff is needed because this is a franchise of people who have been trained to either button up, and they're either maintaining that or they're rebelling against it, but only like Heather, only in the most marginal and in like light of touch of ways. We do need someone like Whitney to just transgress and make it okay for everyone else to like drink a little alcohol, do a little dance, you know, like I need you to go to that end of the spectrum so we know where the spectrum ends, so everyone knows to hit the middle.
And also, even when Whitney is fucking with someone and she surely was taking great relish in seeing Lisa fucked with, that she does still have a lot of natural light. And in a season with a cast that includes Jen Shah, who at her best is a very different kind of spirit, she just really is, plus our knowledge of what's coming, it is very helpful that we have somebody like Whitney who can balance it out. It just is necessary, regardless of how you feel. And everybody has the right to criticize.
Oh, yeah. If you don't like her, that's a total taste.
100%. 1,000%.
And her way of speaking, I find to be very interesting, and I love listening to her, like, sing song or whatever. Some people find it irritating. I get it.
No, I like it, too. I like it, too.
I think the best thing about Whitney is that whenever a housewife does something that they know is wrong or bad, or that they know they're making a problem for someone else, generally they have, like, a couple methods that they slip into. Luann's is usually like, I had no idea, but I just said what it is on camera. Or Ramona does the, like, she like pulls you in. She's like, did you hear? And she's like a cat with like a mouse in its jaws.
Whitney and where the mouse
is a saucy little giggling minx. And I love that. Yes. I love that she's like, and then she runs off into the night. Like, that's so delightful in a cast. Like you said, she has a natural light in her, in a cast that tends to have a natural darkness in it.
Honestly, maybe I want to be flirted a little bit. Yeah. Like I want someone to flirt with me a little bit on Housewives. And she's a flirty motherfucker. And we deserve a little bit of a flirt. We really do.
And I believe that she, I believe that Whitney and Heather could go to a Target and like navigate the experience. I believe that Mary would have a nervous breakdown in a Target. She would be like,
Mary
who are these people?
Mary would be like, you know what? We needed a house here anyway.
Just
you
get
know,
all the customers out. We don't need them.
Robert,
I already bought it all.
Yeah, 100%. Do you guys pray to Jesus? Great. You're a part of my church now, too. I mean, there's a lot happening there. Listen, I want to shift gears to Potomac a little bit because
yes.
What a fucking wild ass episode we saw. What is your reaction to the mothering of it all when it comes to the ways that Candace feels that Mia weaponized her mother, and Mia and the rest of the cast feel that Candace has weaponized her mom? How do you navigate that world and that dynamic?
I think there's different levels of mean, and I think Candace's mom can handle a little shade when she is throwing quite a lot of it on camera, appearing during, you know, music video shoots. Like, it's a very different relationship when your mom's rich and she's a psychologist and she's still doing these things to people. Like, at that point, I think you've opened yourself up, not to an attack, not to be like, oh, your mother's the worst person and I want to murder her. Like, that's the ridiculous. But I do think you open yourself up to shady comments or like someone taunting you in a fight. It's Housewives. But Mia's mom's clearly in a very different set of circumstances and living a very different life, and they clearly have stressors on their relationship that are like, to push Candace's buttons, you can say your mom pays for everything, but really that's an indirect hit, right, on the unhealthy relationship she has with her mom. To say your mom's broke and a drug addict, it's like, well, those are her real issues. Like, stop talking about them. Those are the real issues. Like, you're not indirectly hitting. You're not saying this pattern of behavior is probably very embarrassing for you. It's truly like life and death stuff. And I don't know. To me, it feels different.
I don't think that Candace ever explicitly said your mom is a drug addict. The response that the women were saying was stop bringing her mom into it because she has a history with addiction and because it is so obviously punching down.
Yeah, I think
it's saying like your mom's broke. Your mom is the response. I don't know that. Well, we do not know whether or not she knew about Mia's relationship with her mom prior. She obviously does now and has said on the after show she doesn't regret anything because it's Candace.
And she when the lady said, hey, maybe this is a topic to pull out from, like, you get it. You're rat-a-tat-tat, Candace. She doubled down. She doubled down. And then she started throwing the lettuce because Mia wasn't giving her the response she wanted, which made Candace look, frankly, sorry, Candace fans, I know you are a legion. It made her look pathetic. You can't handle someone not reacting to you, so now you're going to get physical after an entire season where you performed how horrible physical violence was?
Wait, I cannot believe yet again for the second time in 10 seconds I'm almost defending Candace. But when it came to the hand stuff, I thought it was Candace was using her hand to gesticulate, I think, and Mia told her to stop. But the lettuce thing, I thought that Mia threw, who threw the first lettuce at Stonewall? I thought that Mia threw the first lettuce at Candace, and then Candace responded. Did I get that wrong? I thought I have gotten that wrong.
I thought Mia seemed very level-headed. She was like, okay, well, your mom sucks too. All right, well, goodbye. And Mia was handling that and her very drunk husband with a lot more grace than I expected out of any housewife. And I don't think Mia's like, she's not my favorite housewife ever, but I think that was a great moment for her. I think then Candace threw the lettuce because in my perception of events, Mia wasn't reacting. She wasn't giving her an inch. And Candace needs to see a reaction. And if she doesn't, she escalates. And we've seen this pattern over and over again. She does
I agree with that. When her husband
wouldn't pull an Uber around for her, she was like, you're a deadbeat dad. She goes right for the kill. And I think that was an embarrassing moment for Candace because not only did you double down on something that was ugly and a pattern of behavior that you clearly have been spoken to about before, you did the exact same thing that you spent the whole last season telling us that was so horrible. And frankly, not to constantly relitigate last season, Monique was touched first by Giselle, but it's the same situation if Mia threw or Candace threw lettuce or Mia threw lettuce. At some point, when you are up in people's faces and you're pushing them and you're trying to get them to their breaking point, you then can't complain about what their breaking point is. Even though that behavior is still bad, I think like you're all that if someone's walking away from a fight and you're relentlessly chasing them down and saying things, you then don't get to be like, well, they didn't establish boundaries in the nice way.
Literally, this is the upside down. I do not fuck with Candace, but could a person argue that, and I 1,000% disagree with Candace's responses, as I do with essentially at this point 107% of them, but could you argue that Candace herself was first triggered? Certainly she went down 8 times as hard as she needed to in all the worst ways, and we all know that this foot size stuff has some other stuff buried underneath when it comes to body shaming. But when it comes to first someone going too far, could a person argue that Candace was first triggered because Mia didn't necessarily fuck with her mom by like doing a punching down vibe with her mom, but did give her mom the opportunity to unleash what we all know is some lurking resentment to make public about Chris? Like, could one argue that Mia, when it comes to like, you don't learn your lesson with Candace, isn't that actually a lesson that Mia also should have taken maybe first.
Yes, I will agree with you that Mia was completely in the wrong. But I think that Candace is this is a problem with many housewives. You're right. You're right. 100% correct. And yet you went about it in such a bad way that I don't even remember. And frankly, it feels so inconsequential what the other person did to bother
you. I hear you.
And frankly, this is Mia as like a first season housewife. And like this is Candace's main storyline has been the husbandger of it all. And the mom and we're all on the music video set. It seems like the topic's going to come up. Mia didn't need to bring it up. Certainly Karen was on her best behavior. Clearly, if Karen's not getting messy, maybe you don't need to wade into the waters. But at the end of the day, I struggled to even remember how that interaction went because I had seen Candace do some horrifying things to a woman and talk about her feet and her body. Like, Candace always goes for body stuff. It is so gross.
It's gross and it's repugnant and it's her relishing in it. Candace enjoys it in a way that I feel like Mia's trying. It doesn't make it okay, but Mia's trying on a hat. Mia doesn't know the kind of housewife that she wants to be and who to come at. So she is constantly and she's constantly changing her mind. Is it sloppy? Yes. Is it messy? Yes. Does it make it less successful? 1000%. But I don't. And you could argue that this is triggering because a person might know that Mia isn't this person. She's doing this performatively because she hasn't yet hit her groove. I could get why that's frustrating. I could get why I could feel like I am being manipulated in that dynamic so that this person can figure out her role. I get that. But Candace does the thing that she has done every time where she looks at the ugliest tropes and the ugliest stereotypes while saying that she is the one who is being victimized, and she always goes for the hardest and lowest cut, the deepest cut, and she has never, to my knowledge, correct me if I'm wrong, my guess is that you won't, but to my knowledge, has never taken responsibility or acknowledged anything. The only time she attempted to on social was when she apologized for transphobic and homophobic social media posts that she had done in years past while making the very active choice not to apologize for shit people were talking about at the same time, just as loudly, which was fat shaming and body shaming. She refused to do it. She's tripled down on it. And it makes her look like shit. And she doesn't care. That after show is insane.
And to have had such a good beginning to her season where I'm rooting for her. My husband liked her damn song. Like,
her music is great, by the way. The video is shit, but it should be shit. It was $10,000. Her music is great.
But one of the most successful. Yeah. That you would sink your fucking battleship. And, and honestly, she is responsible for what she does. But we also have to lay some of the blame, like Willy Wonka style, at the parents and say that, like, Candace will require many years of intensive therapy to get over this stuff. And, like, best of luck to her family and her husband to have to deal with that. But it's difficult because I've heard other housewives say this, so I know that it's not out of line. When you watch your behavior, it is very therapeutic and you learn a lot about the way that you are.
You hope. That's the hope.
I've listened to a lot of my own voice editing podcasts and it's been a very painful experience, but I do believe that obviously I'm not perfect. Half of your listeners, I'm a polarizing person. Half of your listeners probably don't agree with anything I'm saying, but I will say, having listened to my own thought patterns on a variety of subjects and the ways that I've talked about people and stuff, I've learned a lot of stuff I don't want to do anymore and a lot of stuff that wasn't serving me or anyone around me. And it was good to be self-aware of it. To have that level of self-reflection and not change or grow at all, at some point, you're culpable. You know at this point not to make comments about people's bodies. It has been explained to you by the host of the reunion, by people at home, by other cast members, by producers. And yet you're immediately like, Ashley's got a big forehead. She should die. Like, what?
Oh, my God, Ryan. Yeah, it's kind of like that. It's a little bit like that.
Good for Ashley having a pretty good season.
I mean, Ashley's coming out smelling like a rose a little bit. I'm trying to look. There was before Instagram went down, forever ago. There was a quote that I liked that I Am Brilliant, B-R-I-L-L-Y-A-N-T, posted that I saved because I don't know why. It was like I was super into it, which was something that they posted. You loved the person I was. I love the person I'm becoming. And I don't know why that really got to me. That and Jon Stewart went on SmartList, which is one of my favorite pods to listen to, and talked about the ways that no one, you don't lose a feeling quicker than the feeling of love turning to hate, which is the idea that people love to love people, and the expectation, the reality of that love is you put someone on a pedestal because you know inevitably you'll be able to pull it out from under them. And there is an aspect to, of that to content creators, to housewives in and outside of the Bravo world, in and outside of the world that we live and work in and podcasting, and also in and outside of the world of being a human person. And the reality and connection to Candace is kind of interesting because it's a little bit of a lesson that applies to her in the sense that when it comes to, I'm like figuring this out as I say it out loud, so bear with me on this journey, but in the sense of loving someone so that love can turn to loathe, there is some connection that I see in Candace when I think of that sentence.
She takes us on the cycle really quickly.
She does. And it's also one of those things where I feel like at a certain extent, regardless of my interactions with her and whatever else, I can't help but empathize with her because the journey with her mom is devastating when you think about it. The ways that her mom weaponized, for lack of a better, everyone's favorite phrase, the idea of mental health treatment to harm and shame her child, which is so unbelievably dangerous and cruel and is a long-lasting damage that obviously Candace is now using, as she did against Mia with the "you need to seek therapy," knowing that's where family money came from. You know, it's not a bad thing to go to therapy. Let's pretend it is, though, for the purposes
of your house.
Right. for the purposes of you wanting to make this person feel bad. And with Candace, it's almost maybe the reverse of it a little bit. Like, it's so hard. Candace doesn't allow people to feel for her for very long because of her reactions and because of her behavior. But her expectation is that we will always understand and agree with the idea that her modes of seeking revenge or fighting for herself are always okay. And yeah, she does not understand the difference. She takes pride in saying, "I am smart enough to go low while you stupid fucks try to stay at the middle or maybe do something dumb like going high. I see you and I am smart enough and witty enough and cutting enough to do this and I deserve to do it. And if nobody else does, that's their fucking problem." And she doesn't understand that process. And I think Team Candace does. I think a lot of the people who are supportive of Candace and connect with her, I think that they get it. It's just incredibly unfortunate that she doesn't, because she is and will always remain her own worst enemy. And it's well past time for us to pretend that she cares in any way about anything else but preserving her power to inflict pain. That's it.
Don't you think that some level of it too is that she's so numb at this point? I get that perspective that her mom has cut her in a million different ways, a million different times about everything. And so to her, a comment about a forehead is like throwaway because the things she's heard about herself, and she survived just fine.
Such a good point. What does low mean to her with everything that she's probably endured? That is such a good point, Ryan Houlihan. Such a good point.
So I do understand that for her, she's like, it's tit for tat. But she doesn't understand that tat is very different than Tiff.
Her scale is so fucked up as a result of what she surely experienced, which doesn't mean she can't be held responsible, but maybe it's well past time for us to acknowledge that even after she's told this is the scale, regardless, this is the human scale, she just can't process it because she knows what she's experienced, and she's probably thinking either I was trained to do this, I survived much worse, or whatever else.
Yeah. But oof,
that gives me shivers.
I think ultimately the reason that we keep watching her, right, is that if we take a break between these seasons and next season we come back and she's on her best behavior for 3 episodes, I'm going to be like, I love Candace. She's very charming and she's smart and she's very pretty.
She is charming and she has great reaction shots. There are moments where she's shutting the fuck up and even if she's talking, where I'm looking to Candace to get her reaction. And I do think she is trying to grow. I think that also happens as someone who's never been married and you are married. I think that a part of that must happen after those vows, or regardless of whether or not you've been married, when you enter into any kind of long-term partnership where there is, it's like the trust, you've already communicated and expressed trust, but the transaction has now already taken place. You've decided you're going to be my person, you're going to be my lobster. Maybe you've said that in front of people, maybe you've just said that to your significant other. But once that has taken place, there is a certain point of like, the, you know, flip side of the coin of like, this is the person I can hurt the most because they're not supposed to leave. And also, if this is the person that I have committed myself to potentially forever, I should probably be nicer because I am afraid that they might go, or I don't want this to be a forever that turns bad. I think that's why she's working on stuff with Chris sometimes.
Part of the thing when you get married is like, a lot of people see it as like an ending. But really what being married to someone is committing to growing together and committing that like, I'm going to have my best intentions when it comes to you. And I know you will with me. And there's a level of trust where like, that's why people always say like, just keep talking, communication over and over and over again, because that is the work. That is the like, if I put in a good effort, you put in a good effort, we mean well for each other, we can solve this and figure it out and talk through it. And I believe that when it comes to her marriage, she knows that Chris has her best intentions at heart. And she knows that he knows that underneath all of the insults, the back and forth, the gossip, whatever, she knows that he knows that she ultimately just wants them to be together and for things to work out and to be like nice and stuff like that. But the breakdown in the process is that trust is step one. The rest of it is the communication. The rest of it is the honesty. The rest of it is directness. The rest of it is suggesting things and then not holding it against the other person when they're wrong. Like a lot of a marriage is someone saying to you, I think you're doing this. And then you're like, no, I'm not. And they're like, okay, I'm sorry I tried to figure you out like that and reduced it or whatever. And you're like, it's fine, we're both trying to solve this. And you move on. I think she takes him telling her things she doesn't want to hear as pathologizing or condescending. And that is, again, probably a consequence of having an abusive therapist for a mom.
Yeah, can I also just shout out the fact that I just returned to Hinge after 900 years away? Shout out to Alyssa, who I went to drinks with from Amy Phillips' show, who's phenomenal with Radio Andy when I was in LA. And I was like, I was telling her something about being on dating apps, and 100% it had been so long since I actually logged in that I forgot which app I was in. And then I pulled up once I realized it was Hinge, and like it had to do the, we need to send a, you know, a alert to your phone because we truly don't know if you are actually who you are because it's been so fucking long. So I like log into the account and I'm telling her a story about the many shameful ways that I have imploded on social because I like don't understand technology. And there was someone that I had matched with on Hinge, or it was, I don't do Bumble because I'm not strong enough, but Hinge or Tinder or something. And you know how it like links to social media accounts? So I did a stalk, as we all fucking do, by the way, and did a little bit of a stalk and went on this guy's Facebook. This is so embarrassing. I went on his Facebook and I was like intending to, this is forever ago, intending to like press a photo, and I accidentally sent him a friend request, and it was after we matched, so he knew my last name, and it's like moments after we matched, and I literally died. We didn't speak. I'm sure he unmatched me on, I think it had to have been Tinder, but I genuinely forget. And I was telling this to Alyssa, and I was like, can you, it was like so mortifying. It was my lowest low on, which is frankly optimistic, but my lowest low on social. And then I fucking logged back into Hinge, and who pops up that I matched with than this motherfucker from Tinder who and I'm like, so now we're matching. I'm not going to say a damn thing because I'm mortified. And I don't know if he remembers me. The pictures are the same from 3 years ago. I don't know if he remembers me, though. But can you, this poor man who was like, who's this psycho who matching? I haven't even spoken to her yet, and I accidentally sent him. Like, I should not be allowed. I should talk about, I blocked Candace on social. I should block myself on Hinge. Like, can you even, a nightmare.
I was about to say to you that that's the great benefit of living in New York, a sea of 8 million people. You'll probably never see him again.
No, and then he fucking pops up, and I can't, and I texted.
That's the problem of living in New York. It's a very small island.
Truly, and I texted I texted Alyssa today, and I was like, guess who I fucking saw on Hinge? And she's like, who? And I'm like, the motherfucker. I said, and maybe we'll go on a date. Who's to say? Because I just want, you know what? If he did, God forbid, this poor man reached out to me to go on a date, I 1000% would ASAP without mentioning a thing. I just want to see if he remembers. Maybe I'll bring up, like, what social media channels are you on? Oh, are you on Facebook? That's interesting. Oh, okay, cool. Are you only, like, friends with people that you know? Or do you, like, when strangers that you've only seen through dating apps reach out to you and stalk you like a sociopath? It's going to be an interesting journey. Listen, there's so much for us to talk about, and we haven't spoken about Erica Jayne, that we are going to do a Patreon after show for the fucking ages. That'll be up when this episode goes up. So, guys, we're going to switch on over to Patreon, the number one way to support the pod and Andy's Girls, patreon.com/Andy's Girls. $2 gets you my love and support. $5 a month gets you 2 bonus episodes. $10 a month gets you 4 bonus episodes and invites to special Zoom Kikis that I do throughout the year. So head on over to Patreon right now, because my little boo here, my little co-host Ryan Houlihan, and I are going to do a BH rundown, and I can't wait to unleash your Erica Jayne thoughts, because it's going to be incredible. I do have to say also that Andy's Girls is going live the very first time we've ever done a live show ever. Will be Sunday, October 17th at Club Coming here in New York City. We're hoping to record it for the pod. We will definitely be there live, going to be joined by OG of the AG, Damian Bellino. Tickets are on sale now. We would really appreciate your support by buying tickets now. It helps us get an idea of what kind of show we're going to put on. And we would really love to see a full house of AGs there. So if you've been thinking about buying a ticket, please support the show by buying one now. andysgirls.eventbrite.com. A link in the show notes for this episode as well. Saying that again, andysgirls.eventbrite.com, which you can also get on my Instagram at Dame Galley. We're really excited. Sunday, October 17th, show at 7, doors at 6:30. And if you've been thinking about going and meeting each other, BravoCon isn't happening anymore that weekend, but Andy's Girls Live certainly is.
I'll be there. You can either buy me a drink if you agree with me, or throw one in my face if you don't. As long as it's clear, I'm going to let it go. I'll say, you know what? Fair enough. I talk a lot of shit.
Should we do a dunk booth like on Saved by the Bell through the
of white
years?
Wine, but it's just my fucking mug.
Oh my God, of a white wine spritzer. Poor guys, listen, maybe we'll do packages. Who's to say? It's never too late to do a little bit of an upsell. I'm here for it. Ryan Houlihan, first off, you know I die for you. Love you. One of my boos, and I can't wait for Soho House on Wednesday. Just saying that for the 18th time. Oh, I just said what day we're going. That's fun. Can you tell the people a little bit about Input Mag and also where to follow you online?
Yeah, you can find me at Ryan Houlihan on Instagram, Twitter, everywhere. You're a grown up. You know how to do that. And inputmag.com is an amazing website that you should go read. Honestly, if I was not even involved in it, it would still be one of my favorite websites on the internet. Very interesting stories about fashion and technology and culture. If you like video games or streetwear, or if you see the new iPhone and you're like, is this one worth buying? We'll probably tell you that it isn't. So go to inputmag.com. Where we support the environment and also destroying the environment for consumer electronics.
And don't you? We've also done Housewives stuff and Bravo content.
Yes, we have
too.
An amazing piece by Kyle Turner about the Real Housewives and the relationship that the Housewives and the show have with consumer technology, social media, how that has reshaped our entire concept of femininity and a woman's place in the media. And I think it's one of my favorite pieces I've ever read. You might disagree, but I know that you'll be interested in it. So please go find that. It's so good. It's so good.
I love that. I love that. And Ryan Houlihan, anything I should have mentioned that didn't before we pivot to Patreon to get your thoughts on Erica Jane? Oh, my God. I literally can't wait. I'm like chomping at the bit to end the show.
That you look so beautiful right now. And your listeners should know.
Oh, my God. You know what? I agree. Thank you so much for saying that. Guys, I hope you are all staying safe, staying sane, buying your tickets to Andy's Girls Live Sunday, October 17th. Link in bio of my Instagram at Dame Galley and in the show notes for this episode. And getting vaccinated, which is also super important. And we will talk to you soon. Vaccinated if you can. We understand. We understand.
Girl power.
Girl power. We're about to make a peace sign because we're psycho. And we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.